This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week, number 583, brought to you by Harry's. Go to harrys.com right now and enter the code iFanboy at checkout to get a free trial set. That's harrys.com and the code iFanboy. And iFanboy listeners just like you.
Many years since I was here. On the street, I was passing my time away. To the left and to the right, buildings towering to the sky. It's out of sight in the dead of night.
Here I am! Hello, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 583. I am Josh Flanagan. I am with my co-host, Ron Richards.
Josh, good to be back.
It's good to have you back. And
I know, it's good. I mean, you and I have been doing the show for a month now. We've gotten used to being two hosts. You know, we've gotten over the loss of Connor. I think we're ready to press on.
That's true. And of course, there's our other co-host. Oh, wait. And you are?
Not Mussolini, that's for sure.
I did not say Mussolini. He hijacked my metaphor. And made it into a literal fascist.
Listen, Mussolini was a great man, but the train's not on time.
Hi, I'm Connor.
Welcome back. Welcome back, Ezekiel, Steve, Connor, Benito.
At least we know he listens to the show.
Yeah.
It's true. That was a fun little surprise.
It's supposed to be nice.
Welcome back, brother.
Thank you.
We are iFanboy for now. And every week we read our stack of comics and one of us picks their favorite book, and we call that the pick of the week. We talk about that book. We talk about the other books, the patron pick. Hopefully we do some listener mail. It's a fun old time. Of course, we are talking about what happens in the book, so there's spoilers. There's your warning. Because Benito there was on walkabout for a month, it's obviously his pick.
That's right. And it was nice to get back to the routine of reading comics. And I've been reading a lot of comics in the last couple of weeks as I've been catching up from my time off. And this week was a pretty good week, and I had a bunch of books I could have picked. But in the end, no one was more surprised than me that all new Guardians of the Galaxy number one was the pick of the week from Jerry Doug and Aaron Cooter. It was a book that wasn't even originally on my pull list. I read all my books, and you guys had talked about the last issue of Guardians of the Galaxy that Brian Bendis wrote. And you mentioned that they were starting over again with Jerry Duggan. And I saw Aaron Cooter was drawing it, and we mentioned him as one of the few bright new artists that are out there, even though I don't remember how many years he's been with us now.
Yeah, he's been around for a while, but newer in terms of the mainstream books. Yeah.
I really like him, so I thought, you know what, I'll give it a shot. You guys, this will come up later in the show, but I always feel a little bit left out in the Guardians of the Galaxy love because you guys got really into it 7 years ago.
Got super into it. Super into it. I gotta admit, just a quick side note. So the new movie came out, and which we saw, which we'll talk about later on. I saw it at the Alamo, and you know how they do the little pre-show before the movie starts at Alamo? And they actually edited together a whole comic book history of Guardians of the Galaxy, like this little 5-minute video. And wow. And as I'm watching it, they're showing covers and pages from that classic Abnett and Lanning run. I was like, oh God, that was a great time. Also, more than 10 years ago.
Yep. Yeah.
I read the first page, and it was, fun aliens talking about this impenetrable planet that's the best place to store your valuables because you can't break anything out. I'm like, okay, so it's a heist story. And then I turned the page to the double page spread of Galactus showing up, and it's just this gorgeous double page spread. And I was like, oh man, this is gonna be the pick of the week. I could just tell right away Aaron Kuder was a big reason why this was the pick of the week. And I thought he did a really great job.
Good choice. Here. Good editing.
Yeah.
Really, really great work here. I mean, he's someone who, when he first came on, I was like, oh, this guy's really interesting. And his style has evolved even in a short time he's been around. He definitely has an identity of his own, but he's perfect for this book. He can draw these great aliens, over-the-top action. It was great coloring as well from Yves Forcina. You've got a heist story here where the Guardians have to steal something from the place that can't be stolen from. And it's pretty simple. It's called smash and grab, and it leads to trouble, as always.
I think one of the highlights of this is a ship in the shape of Galactus.
Right.
Because as I started reading this, it opens up with Galactus kind of arriving at this planet, but it's purple Galactus. I was like, hey, what's up? Galactus is yellow now. And then the face opens up and the Guardians spill out of it. I was like, okay, this is going to be a lot of fun. And I was surprised that you picked it. But I wasn't bowled over with surprise because I'm a huge Jerry Duggan fan. I know how good Jerry can be with this sort of stuff, and especially coming off of the disappointing not living up to its potential run of Bendis. I was glad to see that Duggan took it in the kind of fun, what are these guys good at kind of way. And yeah, so I wasn't, after reading it, I was like, oh yeah, it makes perfect sense that it was
the thing is, we have been bemoaning the fact that the comics are taking their cues from the movies and the TV shows. However, here it works.
Yep.
It's very much in the tone of the first film. I haven't seen the second one yet. It was very much in the tone of the first one. The characters are obviously the same lineup. Baby Groot is Baby Groot. Did that happen in the Bendis book too? Is that a thing, or is that he's just suddenly Baby Groot as well?
I forget. No, he wasn't. He wasn't Baby Groot, to be honest with you. He planted himself in Central Park. Yeah, no, he wasn't Baby Groot.
I think that was a thing that happened briefly in the comics, and the movies really picked up on it. Because he was destroyed and had to grow back at some point, but it didn't.
Well, yeah, no. But in terms of recently, in terms of where the last series left off, he was full size Groot. He wasn't a baby.
Yeah, yeah. That doesn't matter.
So in that sense, it's synergistic. But if you can execute to this high level, then it's easier to take. And I'm becoming a really huge fan of Aaron Kuder's work. I think this is the perfect book for him.
Boy, isn't it?
I mean, it looked great. And I don't know if it was because it was on the iPad and it was really brightly lit, but the coloring was really, it popped. Everyone's really bright. You've got a story here with people with green skin and blue skin and raccoons and baby trees and giant fish ships and giant
space fish,
giant Galactus ships. And by the way, that was a really, really smart idea, the Galactus idea.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, God damn it, that was smart.
It really is.
It was just a really fun issue. I had a couple other books where I thought they were going to be the pick, and this one just, I kept thinking about how much fun I had reading that one and how much I wanted to read the next one, and how much I love Aaron Kuder and how much I love that double page spread. I mean, the perspective on that with Galactus in the back with the Kirby dots.
Yep.
You know what's impressive about that is that they had this just killer idea, and you see Galactus and it's double page spread, but he's just sort of one little bit of that page. First panel of that next page, pop, it's over. Yep. They don't even relish it or hang around, and they could, and everyone would have been fine.
Right.
Yeah, so but it was super effective storytelling.
So the killer idea is that this impenetrable planet in which everyone has their valuables, how do you get people off that planet? Is you have Galactus show up and everybody flees. Turns out it's not really Galactus, it's just a little ship shaped like Galactus that the Guardians are using to get into this, basically a giant vault planet. It was a really, really fun issue. I mean, super fun.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it just distills down into what makes the Guardians good. And you're right. There's a lot of, the theme at the top of the show is, at least for me, is the synergy of Guardians of the Galaxy as Marvel finally gets a movie release right, or quote unquote write, but or maybe not. Well, I guess we'll criticize, you know. But you got enough of the character interplay, the interfighting, the bickering, you know, and you know, a tie in at the end to this, you know, the celestial kind of truly cosmic kind of stuff. You know, and then, and you know, while this is really kind of a one and done, it just, you know, this heist story, you know, it leaves you with a little bit of a cliffhanger that says, okay, well, we're building to something. I think it's a great start to a series. And yeah, I think Cooter is perfect for the sci-fi kind of stuff. I mean, like just the opening pages of those aliens and all this sort of stuff, and then the big space fish. Yeah, it just, as I was reading it, I was just like, yeah, no, this is what I'm talking about Guardians.
Also, continuing from Action Comics drawing the best beards in the business.
Can I be honest with you? I don't understand the Marvel obsession with putting Quill in a beard.
I don't know.
Because here's the thing, like, because it's a recent thing. Like, so when the, you know, for years and years and years, Star-Lord was clean shaven, mm-hmm. and then Chris Pratt comes along, and it's not even like Chris Pratt has a beard.
He's just scruffy.
Yeah, it's scruffy, but that translates in the comics to give him a full beard. And
I think Aaron Cooter likes drawing beards.
Yeah, all right, maybe.
And also, kids like beards.
Yeah, no, I know. It just for some reason it unsettles me. I feel like the ratio of facial hair in the comic to movie synergy is off. I think they need to dial down the facial hair in the comics.
Well, I'll never get that 14 seconds back.
So that was all new Guardians of the Galaxy number one. That was Pick of the Week. But if you're a Guardians of the Galaxy fan, boy, this was the week for you as three Guardians of the Galaxy books came out.
Give them credit. You know, you got a big motion picture release on a major, you know, the kicking off the summer movie season this weekend. When was the last time Marvel actually coordinated and had books on the shelves when the movie comes out? Right? I mean, I'll give them credit. You know, so in addition to Jerry Duggan and Aaron Cooter kicking off the quote unquote real book, we get this little side miniseries, which I guess is a weekly.
Yeah, it looks like it's a weekly. Yeah.
Yeah. And so this is Guardians of the Galaxy Mother Entropy number one, written by Jim Starlin with art by Alan Davis and Mark Farmer.
So I read this one, obviously.
So what's funny is that I went into the comic book store on Wednesday, and on the counter where, you know, there's always, you know, the three or four books that are like the main ones that they're pushing. And I went to grab Guardians of the Galaxy because I assumed it was the Duggan Cooter one. And I opened it up. I'm like, this is Alan Davis. I was very confused, but then I was delighted. And now in this case, Alan Davis is drawing a facially hair correct Star-Lord in my mind. Although it's very swashbuckling.
A bit more of a swashbuckling.
Yep.
This to me felt more old school Guardians.
Yep.
You've got the same lineup, obviously, but you got a full-size Groot. Gamora looks a bit more like Gamora and not a Hollywood actress playing Gamora with the big forehead. And Peter Quill has the weird sort of, you're right, sort of like pirate facial hair.
It's very, and with the hair.
Three Musketeers, a bit, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's very kind of swashbuckly. And the team's on nowhere. They're in debt. There's been a lien put on their ship so they can't leave. So they've got to reluctantly take a gig. And they've got to protect this guy who's delivering this box with something. And then Pip the Troll comes in. And Pip the Troll wants to steal what they got. And this is Starlin Cosmic Comics. And it was like, this, as much as I love Duggan and Cooter to be like a more, you know, contemporary take on it, this is like giggly 70s, 80s, you know, Starlin Cosmic Comics. And for us old comics fans, it was a delight. And Alan Davis, anytime I get Alan Davis, I'm happy.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this. This was super fun.
Yeah.
Is Starlin's bar something that's in nowhere?
I'm pretty sure because I paused because I was like, really, Jim Starlin, you named a bar after yourself? But then I thought about it. And I was like, I bet you he's picking up from other people who nodded to him. Yeah,
I'm almost sure Abnett Lanning had that there.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought the same thing. I was like, can you name a bar after yourself?
And then I was like, come on, Starlin, check your ego.
It's like that has to be something from another.
Ask that question to Neil Adams and see what you get.
Well, that's a little difference there. Yeah.
But this was super fun. If you like that old school vibe, I mean, not just because of the story, but the art. You know, the Alan Davis, Mark Farmer art takes you right back.
Yeah,
right.
That's absolutely. Yeah.
I hope they're all doing it, even though it's weekly. Maybe hopefully they banked it up.
Oh, I'm sure they did. They did this before. Didn't Starlin and Davis did something a couple of years ago that was like it was like a weekly 4-issue miniseries that I don't understand what the sales motivation is that for, I guess, but I'll take it. But this is not the first time I feel like we've gotten at least Alan Davis, if not maybe also Jim Starlin, in a weekly 4 or 5 issue miniseries that they just pump it out.
Right.
I remember that happening a couple of years ago. Alan Davis, I just love the guy. Oh, God. Someday I'll get an original art from him. So expensive.
Guardians of the Galaxy Mission Breakout number one was a bridge too far. I did not read that.
Yeah, so talking about corporate synergy, even though Marvel and Marvel Studios and the larger conglomerate of DC, Disney, was able to coordinate the movie release and comics release, they were not able to coordinate the opening of Guardians of the Galaxy Mission Breakout at Disneyland, which is opening on May 27th. But they did get the tie-in comic out today, and that's what this is. It's a single issue that directly ties to the new ride that is at Disneyland.
God. Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep. Yep.
Well, I guess that makes sense because they've been doing those other tie-in books. I mean, it's still
they did the Tiki Room. They've been doing all these kind of parks books. Luckily, I believe this is just a one shot. I don't believe this is actually a series, even though it says number one, because it does end at the has an ending. But yeah, in the first page, you see the building, which is the former Tower of Terror building that they just snapped stuff onto. Mm-hmm. But you see that building on an asteroid, and it's the collector's collection and blah, blah, blah.
Wow.
And then there's the shot of the Guardians is direct of like each of the Guardians in the little box because they've been captured by the collector, which is straight out of the ride. Yeah, this is totally park synergy. And as somebody who enjoys the parks, it's nice to see. It wasn't the greatest comic book, but synergy.
Okay.
Synergy.
Yeah.
Synergistic.
If you're a Guardians fan or if you're a kid who's into Guardians of the Galaxy, this is like I would imagine like if I had a 8-year-old in my life who was into Guardians of the Galaxy and was just like, this would be fine, you know.
What about a 9-year-old?
That would be fine too.
Okay. So I'm really excited to talk to you guys about the Button storyline, Batman 22. If Batman 21 had come out this week, it would have been the pick of the week for sure.
Yeah.
22 was super close.
Hang on, though. Let's just ruminate on two words, Connor.
Yeah.
The button.
The button.
The button.
The button.
Button.
It can mean many things, Ron. You can press a button. Yeah, you can put on a button. You could be on the button.
This was really good.
I'm really enjoying this mini. I'm not mini, but it's crossover. Yeah. A lot. Look. Do I want the Watchmen characters in the DC universe? No. Is it going to happen anyway? Yes. Should I just try to make the best of it? Yes. Are these comics good on their own? Yes. Is it a bit Stockholm syndrome-y? Maybe.
Keep going. Keep going.
Please don't stop.
I don't have anything better than what you're doing right now.
So. I don't think anyone is happy with this turn of events in which the Watchmen's being melded in the DC universe. However, it's going to happen.
Listen, was I happy to see Flashpoint Batman? You bet I was.
But, the way they're doing it is very unusual. This is they're doing it in this crossover with these two books, and it's been very quiet so far. I know I heard you guys talk about how weird that was before.
Yeah.
And it is weird, but it's almost kind of good because it's being very contained. It's being done by these two writers who are quality writers.
This feels like old comics, Connor.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I was thinking. I was like, oh, it's DC Comics.
Yeah.
It feels and looks like it. Like Fabok or however you say his name. So we have to learn that at some point, by the way.
Fabok.
It was like Ethan Van Sciver, but with none of the conscience problems that I have at this point.
Well, yeah, no, the art reminds me of like I see a little Van Sciver, I see a little Ivan Reis. You know, and Connor, we got to admit, Fabok. I see maybe one small panel where we got little lines in the top of the cowl of the Flash, and other than that, he drew it pretty straight on.
Yeah, it was really weird.
Yeah.
I mean, this is very, very impactful. This, we have Flash and Batman show up in the Flashpoint universe, which we all thought had ended at the end of Flashpoint, but apparently didn't end, and it kept going. And we get Bruce and Thomas confronting each other and getting to chat, and I thought that was a very emotional stuff, where you have the father who never got to know his son, you had the son who never really got to know his father, both of whom became Batman, and then the moment where Thomas says, please go home and just stop being Batman for my sake. And I thought that was really great.
I will say this made me actually look back and go, Flashpoint actually wasn't that bad. I could have spent more time there.
I liked Flashpoint back then.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I thought, you get the classic hero moment in which the Flashpoint universe does start to end in the White Flash that we see often in these DC books. And Thomas runs into it like a hero. I thought it was great. And then the little cliffhanger where we see Reverse Flash before he dies as Batman and Flash catch up to him on the cosmic. I just love Batman swinging on a cosmic treadmill in the background like he's windsurfing.
Yeah.
It's just so bizarre. Like, obviously he can't run, but, like, it's just weird.
The whole, you know, him holding on for dear life, riding the cosmic treadmill is a very odd imagery.
But I love it. It's just so.
Yeah, I don't know why he can't just hold on to it. He's got to, like, ride it like he's water skiing.
Right. It was paragliding, like the people that pulled behind this and the parachutes. But anyway, this particular 3 issues run so far has been. This issue was written by Josh Williamson with this plot by Tom King. And yep. I thought the last issue, Batman 21, was one of the best issues Tom King has written. Yep. This is great, though.
Cool. So, yeah. So, talking about big events over at Marvel. So, Secret Empire number 1 came out, 48 pages. Nick Spencer and Steve McNiven. Up to this point, you guys know I've been reading the Captain America, Steve Rogers, what Nick Spencer's been doing with the whole Hydra thing. I believe I was very positive in my commentary about Secret Empire number 0. I thought it was well done.
You got some good,
what's his name? Acuna art. Yeah. You got some, you know, like I thought it was a good start. And then Secret Empire number 1 happens. I gotta tell you, I feel like the only people more bored in this comic, only people more bored than the people reading this comic were the people actually in this comic. All right. You've got Steve McNiven. You've got a world where Hydra has taken over. And what's the majority of the book? There's literally a meeting where Captain America and the rest of Hydra sit around a table. And Captain America is literally bored with his fist up on his cheek as they're talking about how now Hydra has fixed the economy, increased the test scores, like they're fixing the world. And it's just like, I'm like, where's the action? Why do you have people sitting around a table for half the book?
That's hard in a number one issue.
Yes. Especially for 48 pages, you know, like, and so the other problem I had was that I thought Zero was a good kickoff to it because we saw the moment that, you know, Steve Rogers made his move and the moment that Hydra rose up. And then this issue picks up. There's no explanation of how much time has passed. There's no, you know, like you get a sense that time has passed because now the world is completely run by Hydra. You know, all the heroes are in hiding or on the run. And there's many, many mentions of what Hydra has done in terms of fixing the economy and fixing education and fixing the world and how great it is. But it was almost too jarring. Like, I get what they're trying to do. Like, it's supposed to feel like an alternate universe, but it's not where a Flashpoint thing happens where this, you know, so like, give me 1 year later, give me 6 months later, give me some time to grab onto. But, yeah, no, this was not good.
How were the trains?
The trains ran on time, though. That's the important thing.
So let me ask you a question. If you hadn't read issue 0, would this be completely incomprehensible?
Yes.
So why was it issue 0, not issue 1?
I don't know. It should have been issue one. I don't understand what the motivation is here. But there's literally, I'm going through, flipping through the book. There's literally 6 meetings in this book.
No, it's a Wednesday.
My problem with it is more that what we're starting to see, we saw this with that Monsters book a little while ago, is that the new way to get superstar artists onto something is to have one do
one issue
each issue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I hate that.
They're doing that for the series. Yeah.
No, they did it on the other one though. We're gonna see it, like, that's a thing that they've decided to figure out. Like, oh, we can't afford either the time or the money to have somebody stick on something for that long. Or, I mean, maybe it's artists don't want to commit to something for that long or something like that, but it's the continuing story of the discontinuity of artwork in comics.
I think it's because they keep getting burned on events by these big artists and they come out super late. And then it ends up affecting their entire publishing line. And that happens. I mean, I don't like it. I don't like it necessarily either. Although I did like it with American Alien. But I think that's probably why, because they just get screwed.
Well, because I feel like American Alien, that was part of the pitch. That was part of the, listen, we're going to tell all these little vignettes about Superman. We're going to have a different artist. That works. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Anthology. Exactly. But I mean, I can't imagine Steve McNiven like getting the script and going, all right, great. I'm back. I'm going to be drawing a big event book. All right. Let's see. Captain America in a meeting. 4 pages. Oh, the Heroes at a Meeting, 4 pages. Captain America at Dinner with Sharon Carter, 4 pages.
I gotta tell you, I flipped back at the beginning and I was like, wait, is this Steve McNiven or is he doing the whole thing? I just thought, I don't know if he was bored with it or what, but it didn't feel like.
No, it was not good McNiven. So did you read it, John? So you read it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I read it.
Did you see Falcon's new G.I. Joe-esque costume?
If I did, I didn't really notice.
Similar to the movies where he looks like a
G.I. Joe? No, it's not at all. I imagine. So I guess Sam Wilson ditched the Captain America persona because there's Falcon and he's got this green outfit, which has got a deep, deep V-neck that goes down to like his belly button. But then he's got a helmet like sci-fi from G.I. Joe.
Oh,
yeah, it's just like
that's not aerodynamic at all.
What is this? But like, there's other weird stuff. Like, so Hawkeye is leading, has got all the heroes, and they're holed up in a mountain where the Pantheon used to. You remember Hulk and the Pantheon? It was like an old secret base of theirs, which I like that. But then Hydra's ruling the world, and Captain America has a team of Avengers that's got Scarlet Witch and Thor on it with no explanation.
They joined up on the other side.
And I understand, but this is an alternate reality, isn't it, or is it not?
It's not an alternate reality. It's not.
Oh.
That's the thing, is that it's not at all. It's not like the Cosmic Cube tweet the world and this is the world now. No.
What happened was that costume is awful. I'm sorry. I just found it.
Yeah. You see what I'm talking about?
I don't even think I saw him.
I know.
It's actually. All right.
Listen, I'm sorry. It's literally. Okay. This is a line of dialogue from Captain America. I'm sorry for reading at the table, Sharon. It's just they gave me these briefing papers, but no one ever has time to read them. This one about public health. It's amazing the progress we've made. Same with standardized test scores. Really? Like, this is a superhero comic.
I got to tell you, the word, and he's with his mopey face. I think, like, the people are mad, like, oh, Captain America's a Nazi, which isn't strictly true, but whatever. The worst part is, like, so he keeps her chained up as his, like,
date.
Like, I was like, oh, how does Sharon fit in this? And, like, oh, she knows everything is shitty and she's mad and sitting at the table. Like, that seems way worse.
Yeah.
I will point out that you guys have in the past advocated for a book about bureaucracy in the Marvel Universe. So it seems like you finally got it.
Not
this is not it.
Cameron, this isn't middle management Red Skull. All right. That's different, right? Well, the other thing that pissed me off was that in the meeting scene, it's the inner circle of Hydra, and it's, you know, and it's Captain America, it's Baron Zemo, it's a bunch of characters I don't care about, Dr. Faustus, Madame Hydra, and then Arnim Zola, which is like, all right, cool, give me some Arnim Zola. And I don't know if McNiven just, if the editor didn't catch this, or McNiven just was doing this out of spite. But there's a bunch of medium shots at the table where, like, Arnim Zola is talking to Captain America and raises his hand, and McNiven drew it from the chest up as if Arnim Zola's little camera head was his actual head and not his face in his chest. And it's just like, it's like, if you're going to show Arnim Zola, show the little blue face in the chest. Like, that top part isn't his head.
Hmm.
Maybe they did that on another panel, though. Maybe it's just funny.
Yeah, I don't know, right? It's so, oh God.
I mean, I think it comes down to, I don't think this was a bad comic necessarily. I just didn't, like, the whole time though, I haven't really cared.
I was bored. I was bored by it.
Yeah.
So are you going to,
probably
keep reading it?
Of course. Of course.
That's what's really funny is that for all the complaints, I mean, these books are selling tons and it's like, what do you expect Marvel to do here? You can complain, or you can, and then don't read it because they'll keep making them if you keep buying them.
Yeah,
I have to do this show.
I get exactly. You guys are different. I'm just saying in general, the numbers came out on Zero and it was a blockbuster.
Right. Yeah. Well, Zero was good. Zero was good. If that was the first issue, and you have Acuna on that event, and it didn't do a time jump, and it wasn't ridiculous, and it wasn't filled with meetings. I mean, and I understand that I do like bureaucracy, but this is just boring bureaucracy.
Captain
like
America
literally
doing bureaucracy.
Literally, Captain America is bored in it. So why should I, as the reader, not be bored?
Who died?
That applies.
Rick Jones. Spoiler.
He was
firing squad. Firing squad. Yeah.
All right. On that exciting note.
I need to shave, Connor.
So you guys know, anyone who's listening, I've been on the road like 4 out of the last 5 weeks, 6 weeks. I'm going out again.
We got a regular Willie Loman over here, guys.
So one of the things I have a problem with when I'm on the road is I don't feel comfortable. I don't have all my bathroom stuff. You know, you don't feel like, oh, this isn't my soap, you know.
Yeah.
But one of the things you don't have to worry about with Harry's is you can travel with it. So I brought all my Harry's gear with me. All throughout my trips, I had my little box with the extra blades. I had my little traveling case with the blades I was using. I had my handle. I had my soap. I felt, at least, at the very least, my head felt like it should. And so that's what's so great about Harry's, is you can bring it and you can still feel good because the quality of the product is still so high. And that's why we're talking about Harry's today. For decades, Big Razor has relentlessly increased prices and reaped immense profits at the expense of its customers. And so Jeff and Andy, just two ordinary dudes who were fed up with getting ripped off, started Harry's to fix shaving. Harry's knew there was only one way to get ensure quality, so they bought their own blade factory. It's in Germany. And as we all know, Germans make great blades. By taking less profits and selling directly over the internet, Harry's offers blades at half their price. For just $2 a blade compared to four or more you'll pay at a drugstore. And Harry's is so confident you'll love their blades, they're giving you a free trial set for free. Just pay $3 in shipping. Your free trial set includes a weighted ergonomic razor handle, 5 precision engineered blades with a lubricating strip and a trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, and, all important, as I mentioned earlier, the travel blade cover. That's $13 in value you get to try for only $3 in shipping. Stop messing around. Start shaving today with Harry's by claiming their free trial offer to just cover shipping. Go to harrys.com/ifanboy for your free trial set, including a razor handle, 5-blade cartridge, and shave gel. harrys.com/ifanboy.
Stand up against Big Razor. Use Harry's.
My head feels great, no matter where I am in the world.
Hey, listen, I'm on the road, too. I brought my travel razor. I'm all set. So it's all you need.
The Flintstones, number 11. If it had just been about the hipsters invading Bedrock, it might have been the pick of the week.
Well, I mean, not only was it the hipsters invading Bedrock and gentrifying, but for me, the highlight of the moment was the recurring gag, at least two panels, of after Fred's birthday and Barney gives him his very thoughtfelt present of a life-size statue that he carved of the both of them, and Fred doesn't like it, and Fred looks out on it and goes, really, I don't want it either, and then sees Barney in his window waving at him. Like that got it for me. Like those, it happens twice in the book, and that got me every time.
So the hipsters move in. They've got a vegan place across the way. They are buying the properties up that are around Barney and Fred's house, and they're beautifying. They don't like the Barney statue, which is a little homoerotic.
Yeah.
Which it felt like a weird note that the hipsters wouldn't like the homoerotic statue.
Right, you think that they would like it. Yeah, who knows.
But I liked enough of it. I liked the landlord showing up to raise the rents, and then Dino breaking the TV because Dino's an idiot. The alien stuff I wasn't quite as into, which is why I wasn't picking the week.
Not one of my favorite issues.
Yeah. You don't like hipster stuff.
It hits too close to home.
I don't think. I do think that, like, I was like, they're kind of doing gentrification, but it just wasn't as toothy as maybe some of the other things they've gone after.
It didn't go far enough.
I think that's it.
Yeah.
Although I was sad to see at the end of the issue, it says next month, farewell to Bedrock. Last issue. Next.
Damn it.
I know. It's tragedy. So I got a bone to pick with Marvel in relation to X-Men Gold number 3. Mm-hmm. Nothing about the artist, you know, that's all been talked about and said. But why on earth would you remind me of a time that I look back on fondly with this goddamn cover? Where you've got the new X-Men Gold logo at the top, and you've got Kitty Pryde saying, don't mess with the X-Men with the old logo. The old, perfect, wonderful, perfect, yes. X-Men logo.
I know.
Oh, God damn it.
Is that why you wanted to talk about the issue?
That's it. It's purely that's it. I'm just really mad that they used the old logo to remind me that they even have the files.
You're right. Maybe they didn't have them, but they didn't want to make them again. Yeah. I just want to say I've been really enjoying Gold and blue, but I think blue is better.
You heard of me on the show. Yeah, blue is my favorite. Gold is not quite there yet.
I do like the lineup, though.
Yeah, but yeah. Anyway, yeah. God damn that logo. I love that logo.
So continuing on Marvel Cosmic Nova number 6, this was an issue where between this and the Guardians books, I was like, man, I really got to go back and read those Abnett Lanning books.
Oh, they were so good.
They were really good.
They were so,
it's not
so
like
good.
You were in a position to have known about it, though.
I know, it wasn't like I heard about it every month from you guys. No one ever got it for Christmas.
That's very funny. I think this is great. This is dealing with why Rich Rider, like, it goes into, explains what happened in the Cancerverse. And yeah, I mean, this has been solid. It's been, you know, we talked about it being a little up and down. I think this was more of an up.
Josh?
It's fine.
Didn't you put this on the list?
I know. I'm just trying to figure out where I stand on it, I think. and I really liked Sam and why can't I think Rich, you know, sort of being in, I don't like the Cancerverse stuff. Like I don't want that part. Like once it went there, I was like, oh, this is away from the part of the book that I was enjoying. And like, then you have to deal with this. So what you had before was this team of guys who were like, the older guy was helping the younger guy. And it was like, they were trying, and now it's like, how could you do this to us? And I was like, ugh, it doesn't always have to do that.
So do you think they should have just brought Rich back and just ignore the Cancerverse stuff?
Absolutely.
Guys like Ron would have screamed their heads off though.
Exactly. Exactly.
You got to explain how it came back.
Then do it in a page and get it done with, and just have him be. I mean, it's like every other character family has an old one and a new one, or a girl one and a boy one, and just like have this, like, just let it be.
Yeah.
So Nowhere is what? Not Nowhere. WorldMind. WorldMind is what?
WorldMind is like the collective intelligence and sort of the Jarvis. Not
Alexa.
Not the movie.
Alexa.
Like a sentient Alexa.
Yeah, Alexa of the Nova Corps.
Yeah, the Jarvis, but the movie version, not the
right. Yeah, it's the computer that's in their helmets. Yep. And there was a main kind of like a power battery, Green Lantern kind of example, whatever, where the World Mind was, but it was also networked through all their helmets. So whenever,
I also don't like that.
And at the end of Rich Rider's thing, I'm pretty sure the Nova Corps was gone. And World Mind was in Rich's helmet. It was all that sort
that
of stuff.
But that was in that book for a while. And I don't like the idea of like he's mad and wants to get. I've seen that story a lot, where like the artificial intelligence or the computer or whatever gets mad and wants revenge and train.
Yeah, we've seen that. So anyway, but I'm very curious to talk to Josh about Black Bolt number one, because this was fantastic.
It was really good.
It was really good.
It was actually Black Bolt. It was something I recognized. It looked good. It read good. The tone was good. They took Black Bolt out of the club.
Yep.
Put him, you know, like I was like, oh, it's a real Black. He looked like Black Bolt. He didn't have a modified costume.
And it didn't, I mean, it tied into the power, but it didn't, you know, like, so he's imprisoned and he's got this muzzle and you think it's keeping him from being to use his power, but then the muzzle comes off and he's in a place where the power doesn't work. You've got Crusher Creel, but he's got no powers. Like it ties back to Marvel and the whole world, but like has got that cosmic kind of feel. Christian Ward.
Yeah.
I think this was my pick of the week, to be honest with you. This was really good.
What do we know Ward from?
He did like, Odyssey with Fraction.
Oh, okay.
And he did some stuff on Ultimates, Ultimates 2 or Ultimate, you know, like the more recent Ultimates. Yeah, he's great at this, you know, really out there, you know, kind of, you know, he's
an Escher-y kind of page in here.
Yeah.
I was on a Inhumans boycott, but I'm downloading it right now. I'm surprised, Ron, that you read it, considering how virulently against the Inhumans you were.
Here's the thing is that, one, I'm pro-Christian Ward, and I was curious, and I saw some pages about it, and when I saw the pages I saw prove that he was not in the nightclub, it was not related to anything that was going on in humans, I'm like, all right, I'll give it a shot. It was written by Saladin Ahmed, who I don't even know who that is. But
I think he's an internet, like a Twitter thing.
Oh, yeah? Okay. Like, well, anyway. So I gave it a shot. I'm like, yeah, let me give it a shot. I'm glad I did. It didn't. It was the fact that it wasn't written by Soul and tied into the whole Uncanny Avengers and all that sort of Uncanny Inhumans.
The cloud. The cloud.
Yeah, exactly.
Saladin Ahmed is a science fiction fantasy writer.
There you go.
I mean, there's a great page where he breaks out of his. There's a full page splash page when he breaks out of his gauntlets that he's, you know, trapped in. I mean, for me, this is like it was a tour de force with art. But Ahmed's script and story was also sparse in dialogue. There was a lot of show, not tell.
Oh, good.
Which works. I mean, it was interesting. As somebody who, a lot of times when you get those other writers who come in, it gets very, very wordy. And this was actually very, very sparse in words, which I think was good because it told a great story and got it across. It was fantastic.
Great. I'm going to download and read it.
Yeah. It was cool. Good.
Cool. All right, so that's going to lead us to our last book we're going to talk about, which is the book that you, our supporting patrons, decided we needed to read.
Psychopaths.
Every now and then, like we've had some ups, we've had some downs.
You guys were praising them like 3 weeks in a row, and then you knew we'd come back to bite you in the ass.
Yeah. So what it was is that it was Youngblood number one, written by Chad Bowers, with art by Jim Tao, with a backup story with art and story by Rob Liefeld. And this is the latest chapter in Liefeld's attempt to reboot Youngblood, and I feel like I've read this comic 9 times.
I feel like I've read this comic 9 times, and I don't like it. I've never liked it.
What's funny is I have no memory of the details of Youngblood. I started reading this, and I was like, I don't remember. If you put a gun to my head, I couldn't tell you the premise of Youngblood. It started to come back a little bit. Weren't they like sort of celebrity superheroes? Was that it?
They've taken a bunch of different. There have been a bunch of different gimmicks that have been applied to them over the years. At first, they were a government team, Avengers-esque.
Right. Well, all the original books are just ripoffs of Marvel books that were out there originally.
Right, exactly. And then when they got rebooted in the late 90s, the attempt was to do if they are celebrities,
right?
You know, kind of celebrity heroes.
Casey wrote one of those.
Right.
Was it a reality show?
I think it might have been.
No, it wasn't a reality show. That was Wild Guard. No, that was not. Okay. Yeah, the reality show was never. There was never a reality show side of it. So, like, first when Liefeld launched it, when Image launched, it was government sanctioned.
That's right.
Then in 1997, Alan Moore came in and he tried to make it more. You know, that's when Supreme got tied in, and there was more of World War II history and all that sort of stuff. You know. And then we had in early 2000s, that's when it was kind of put to the more celebrity kind of thing. 2005 is Josh, that's when Joe Casey did it. And what he did was he rescripted the original miniseries. So like okay. it wasn't a new version. It was he took the old stuff and rescripted it, which I thought was really interesting, which is a kind of thing. And then they rebooted it in 2011. Which wasn't any good, and then now this is the latest version where we not only the premise now is that the team has been disbanded, years have passed. Die Hard is president, which is ridiculous, and there's an app called Help or Helper that superheroes respond to, and you know, like it's struggling for relevance in a modern. It's an old idea struggling for relevance in a modern world.
I found it interesting that the Jim Tao art was sort of in line with what's happening in the Wildstorm.
Yeah.
It's sort of similarly styled. And then and then there's the backup. I didn't like any of this. I was bored.
I think that's safe to say. Let's just go to rating.
I also didn't know what was going on. Like I don't think I've read a Youngblood book in 20 years. And I was
they didn't do a good job explaining things. Right, Youngblood is a book that I have enjoyed back, 25 years ago. And every time Liefeld tries to get new creators to reboot it or whatever, like I said, they struggle to make it relevant in this world, and it fails. And I think that's for a reason, because it's an old idea, and nobody has really, like similar to us groaning when we see people trying to work Twitter or social media into comics. This idea of this app that heroes respond to and all this sort of stuff, and the older heroes watching a younger generation, all this stuff. It just felt all tired kind of tropes, and it just smacks trying too hard for me.
I don't feel like that's a bad idea. I think it's a pretty good idea, but I do feel like I've seen it somewhere. Or wasn't that in is the villain version of it in Nick Spencer's Foes of Spider-Man, I think.
Yeah.
That was what it was.
All right.
Ant-Man. Nick Spencer. It was the Ant-Man book.
Ratings.
I have one more comment on the thing before we go to it.
Yeah.
So I'm following along. I'm trying to sort of like absorb it, like trying to find something nice. And then you get to the last page when Shaft, which I don't feel like comfortable saying.
Why?
I don't know. It's just like I feel like it's a bad double entendre, and I'm supposed to just be okay with that, and I'm not.
All right, just move on.
But there's the last page of him standing there in that costume, and I just thought, God, that's awful. Just like I just don't like the aesthetic or the design, and I was instantly like, nope, that'll do. And that's before I even got to the backup area.
Yeah. Ratings.
Two and a half. I think the problem wasn't so much execution though, as it was just like there's not a thing here.
Yep.
Sticking with it.
No.
All right.
Well, thank you, patrons. And you can go to patreon.com/ifanboy, sign up, and you get your opportunity to become to vote on a book for us to talk about every week, you bastards.
So also you go to patreon.com/ifanboy and you give above the $5 level, you get your own superpower, which we give to you on the show. And this week we're going to thank a couple people for signing up. Blake Etheridge. You know how Forge can make anything? out of what's around. Yep. He's like a super MacGyver. Blake can cook anything out of what's around. He's a culinary forge.
Even like plastic?
If it's edible, Ron, and not poison.
Okay, so it's gotta be organic.
It's still food. Yeah.
Okay.
He can make anything.
All right. Did you have breakfast this morning, Connor?
I did not.
Oh, there you go. All right.
There you go.
And we're getting close to lunchtime.
Julian Halligan. We're getting past lunchtime for me. I still haven't eaten. Julian Halligan is the human foghorn.
What does that mean?
I do like that.
He can open his mouth and make the big foghorn sound.
Is it only when fog's around, or does he can do it at any time?
No, it's a skill or an ability that he has. You know, like, we need to warn those people. I've got this.
Wow.
Okay.
No, I don't want to go down this rabbit hole.
Loud.
It's a good one.
Like if it was a shipping a vessel.
Sweet.
So we want to thank Freddie Wadsworth. And you know how, like, in the Inhumans, Medusa has the prehensile hair kind of thing where she's got very long hair and can control it or whatever.
Yep.
He has similar power, but it's just his nose hair.
Hmm.
So his nose hair can grow really long, and then it's prehensile. He can pick things up and stuff like that, but then it contracts back into his nose. Prehensile nose hair.
All right. Can he trim it?
Well, yeah, he can control the length of it. He can make it really long, pull it back in, that sort of thing. But he's also he doesn't need to trim it. But he also then can pick things up with it and that sort of thing, which is great when you're moving luggage, but it looks weird.
Not so great when you're on a date.
Exactly. Well, he's gotta pull back. Unless she knocks over the wine bottle and he uses his nose hair to grab it, like kind of like, oh, I got it. It's like, what is that?
Still not good. Scott Seaholm, in one word, Xerox.
I think we need more than the one word.
All right, well, he puts his hand on a document, and out of his other hand comes a copy.
Does he
I didn't know where we were going up until other hand. And out of his...
Does he have organic toner?
This is all internal, organic toner paper. He's got you covered.
Is it toner or inkjet?
He's a laser copier.
Nice. Inkjet.
Yeah.
Very cool. All right. So go to patreon.com/iFanboy. You can sign up. Anybody who signs up at the $5 level or higher gets their superpower for free that we bestow to you on a show. And that is just one way you can help support iFanboy. Go to iFanboy.com/support and find all the other great ways. There's a link there to shop on Amazon. You can do your it's never too early to start Christmas shopping. And you can.
It's true. Oh, my God. Shut your mouth.
Any shopping you do on Amazon, we get a little kickback from Amazon. Not from you. It doesn't come out of your pocket. It comes out of Jeff Bezos' pocket. So that's really an easy way to help support our fanboy. Also, you can donate directly via the PayPal button. And we thank everybody who's done that up to date. Or, as we mentioned earlier, patreon.com/iFanboy. We are less than $700 away from doing a monthly, adding another monthly podcast where we're talking about some media that's not comics related. So if you want to hear us talk about movies or TV shows or books or music or whatever, we'll do it once a month. We got to hit that goal, though. We're seeing more patrons come on every day. And so please keep it going. If you're thinking about supporting iFanboy, now is the time. Go to patreon.com/iFanboy. And the t-shirt merch store that was our previous goal is launching this month. It's going to be very, very soon. It would have been this week, except I was on the road, so I'm sorry. And in fact, if patrons go back to the last hangout that we did last week,
Monday.
Yeah, this previous Monday, you can see a preview of one of the shirts. So you definitely want to go check that out, and it gives you an idea of what's coming. Ratings.
There's quite a hit in the chat room.
Yeah,
which is nice.
I was happy to see that. Yeah, very cool. So yeah, go to patreon.com/iFanboy. We thank everybody for their support. On to the email.
Ken L. from Valparaiso, Indiana. Says, here is a question I've been wondering about for these 3 years. In lettering of comics, we often see words that are bold-faced. In a lot of cases, the bold-face goes on a word that might be emphasized verbally, like the butler did it. But in other cases, the bold type seems to go on arbitrary words. What is the decision process a letterer might use to decide which words to display in bold-faced type? All those words were in bold-face in his email.
Yeah, the words that Connor's emphasizing were in bold. It's hard. It's not really an audio joke. So, yeah. But yeah, no, that's a good question. Is that, you know, for years and years and years, we've seen lettering, we've seen bold used in comics in different ways, and sometimes people wonder what it is. It's a fair question, Ken. So what we did was, as opposed to us trying to answer it, we went to an expert, and I reached out to friend of the show, Chris Eliopoulos, master letterer, the finest letterer in the business, if you ask us. And Chris says his response was pretty simple. Simple was all in bold. The letterer bolds the words the writer indicates in a script. As a writer, I tend to bold the words I emphasize in a sentence. Some others bold the words they think are important. Take, for example, the sentence, "I never said she stole my money." That sentence could have seven different meanings depending on which word you emphasize. The bolding of words in comics does that job for me. I will say that some writers aren't sure how to bold words and tend to bold almost every other word. We call that Shatnering because it's so much like Captain Kirk speak. Which I thought was great, by the way, a little behind the scenes.
Letterer gossip.
Letterer talk. Yeah, letterer talk. In some cases, the proper names of characters are bolded to emphasize the naming of that character. Then, obviously, there are other cases when a character is shouting and the words are bolded to show that it is loud. So, different reasons for bold. Hopefully that clears things up, but it doesn't look like there's a hard and fast rule, and it's just used for emphasis, really.
Emphasis.
I thought that was funny. I would have liked him to gone into more detail about the seven different meanings of "I never said she stole my money," because it's true. Yeah, if you bold "I," it's "I never said she stole my money." 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 That's the Goodfellas read at the end. So,
you know who was an inveterate Shatnerer?
Who?
Kirby. When Kirby did the Fourth World, he was just like, it was seemingly at random and constant. And that was a lot of people would read them and be like, what is going on here? So there, it's some rare, I don't know if it's the opposite of praise, but if you read a lot of those sort of 70s Kirby books, that's what they look like. That's how they read.
Well, thank you, Chris Eliopoulos, for chiming in and giving us the expertise there. So
One more. Eric F. of Brooklyn said, "I had an argument with a friend about which current writer in comics has the chance to be considered the best writer in comics history. I said Jason Aaron because he's the most consistent writer now and has made no mediocre or bad books. My friend said Kirkman because of how he changed the industry and has defined a new version of success for comic writers. Moot point, since I think Stan Lee is the de facto choice probably forever, but my question in these kinds of arguments is, what is your criteria for these lists, and on a scale of 1 to Electra, how important is impact? Can you consider someone one of the best if they don't change everything, but instead do the job at the highest level for a long time?" That's a good question.
It's a good question.
I don't agree with any of it.
Any of what?
Any of the, I don't, either of their things. Like, he's great, but I'm not going to call him the greatest writer in comic history.
Wait,
I mean, it's hard to do that greatest in history because
it's all subjective.
Yeah, well, I mean,
not only is it subjective, but it requires the standing the test of time.
And the other thing is, in comic book writing, there's a lot of standing on the shoulders of giants.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you could make all sorts of arguments. Stan Lee.
Well, hold on. Before we get into the muck of who the best writers, how do we rate impact as a criteria in the argument? That's the real question.
I think I agree with Josh in disagreeing with it, because I don't think you can. Yes, Kirkman had an impact on the business of comics, but that doesn't affect his writing.
Again, we're not talking about the writer. We're talking about how do you rate the impact as a writer in their, how important is impact in a writer? If you're a writer who only writes great comics but never changes the industry, never has an impact, never creates an important character, never tells them, you know, like how important. It's like, Ron, it's like a solid 300 hitter, 25 home runs every year, 100 RBIs, but never more than that. It's just, you know, 25 years of solid numbers. How important is that versus a guy who, you know, changes the way the game is played? That's really the question.
Right, yeah. I mean, like you think about the impact of somebody who, you know, has an amazing year and breaks a record, but then hits 275 for the rest of his career. You know what I mean? Like, that's the thing. I mean, I think there's more to be said for longevity and consistency of quality than changing the game, you know, to a certain degree.
I think you have to have both.
To be called the best ever, you have to have both, yeah.
You have to have both because there's lots of guys that we can point to. I mean, if it's just being good for a really long time, good is also subjective, and also it's based sort of on what time that stuff is being done in. you know, good for 1960 is not the same as good for 1985, which isn't the same thing for now. So, you know, Kurt Busiek, he's one of the great ones, but is he one of the best? No, he didn't, you know, he's doing his thing. It's sometimes it's noticed, sometimes it's not. It has to be a combination of all of those things.
To be called the best ever, I think you have to have all of them.
Yeah. Which I mean, it leads into the conversation. You can start using examples because you start to say why or why not this person. So, like, I mean, my first instinct would be like, well, in my lifetime, the closest to that is probably Alan Moore.
Yes.
Because obviously. Of all yeah. of those things. I could say that Garth Ennis is my favorite, but I don't think that he has quite the impact that an Alan Moore did. If it came out right now that Alan Moore was like going to write Aquaman, like it would be the biggest thing ever.
Right.
And it would be really good because he's never done anything that wasn't really good.
That's
he's done true. Stuff that people didn't. I think he's done stuff that people didn't like, but it was because he wanted to. And for what it was really good, but it wasn't what people were looking for from him necessarily.
I don't think there's any writer's never done something that's not good.
No, I know that. I mean, like that, like not 100%. That's fine. But like who else in that, like Grant Morrison, Frank Miller, these are sort of the modern guys. Modern in the sense of not Silver Age, basically.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think you have to have a game-changing impact to be the best ever in some way. And I think the only modern person is Alan Moore.
Yeah.
You can make a case for Frank Miller. You can make a case for Frank Miller.
I mean, and in more recent, you could make a case for Grant and you could make a case for Bendis, I could say. But again, that's got to change. That's got to stand the test of time.
Every comic is still being written like a ripoff of Dark Knight or Watchmen.
Right? Yeah.
Tonally.
Yeah.
It's still being felt, you know, 30 years later.
And in a way, lots of comics were written trying to rip off Bendis for a long time. And there's, you know, there's less successful sort of Morrison wannabes.
Yeah.
But I don't know that Bendis probably did more to change the way comics were, mainstream comics were built sort of in long-term storytelling than anybody since Moore.
I don't think you have the Secret Empire number one all meeting issue without Bendis.
Yeah, agreed. Totally agreed.
I think Marvel as it is, and part of the reason why it's starting to feel stale is that I think they're trying to get away from the Bendis model and they haven't figured out how yet.
Yeah. The problem is that we are comics, and this goes back to what we were talking about with the state of the industry a couple of weeks ago, Josh. But I think that, you know, regardless of whether we're coming out of the age of the writer or not or whatever, comics desperately needs the next Alan Moore or Frank Miller to come in and just turn everything upside down. And I don't, you know, and that's the kind of thing you can't predict. You don't know when it's going to happen. You don't know who it's going to be. But of the current crop, I don't see anybody who is like that.
What's interesting is that, like, I think it has to be a writer artist. One thing, like I feel like, or just a team of new people who we've never heard who really do something amazing. We need a Watchman, basically. Yeah. People are trying so hard to make one that we're not getting one. But like you take a guy like Terry Moore or James Stokoe or something like that, guy who's working on the fringe, like undeniably brilliant, interesting, unique, makes an impact, but not like a widespread impact. We've got a lot of those guys, I feel like. Yeah.
And I feel like we've had momentary glimpses of moments, you know, like say what you will or whether you want it. But I mean, I think, like, you know, Fraction Aha on Hawkeye was a moment of like, this is, you know, but I don't think it was
that
enough.
Was the moment.
That was a moment. It wasn't a career. Exactly. Yeah. I don't know. It's a good question, though. But yeah, as much as I think Jason Aaron is one of the best writers in the business right now, I don't know.
I don't think any current writer in comics right now has the chance to be considered the best comic writer in history. That's what I think.
Because
nobody, none of them invented anything. You have to go back
Kirkman.
To that. Yeah. Totally includes Kirkman. I think you could have the conversation of who's the best
business person of
most,
all time,
or who's the most impactful comic book writer currently. But if you're talking best of all time, like that's sealed, that's done. And I don't know who that answer is, but I know it's one of the people who isn't doing it anymore. Whether it's you make an argument,
all right,
Stanley, Eisner. I mean, like there's.
Well, yeah, but those are legends. I mean,
I know,
that,
but those are
the best ever. Yeah, it would be a legend.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
they invented the game.
It's like Babe Ruth being the baseball player of all time.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And you look at Connor, you go back to baseball, like who's the Babe Ruth of now? Like nobody, you know, like I'm, you know, so.
Well, Aaron Judge, apparently.
not really. Maybe. All right. Well, if you've got any questions, you can email us at content@ifanboy.com. You can send us your emails or voice clips in an MP3. It's always great to hear from you. Tell us who you are, where you're from, how long you thought about it, and make sure to keep it short to get on the show. All right. We got lots to plug. Josh, kick things off for us.
So you guys are going to do a Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 show.
Yes.
I've seen the movie at this point.
And I will have seen it by the time people hear the show.
So yes. Like next week.
Next week,
this,
yes.
This week coming up, this week, yes. There will be a show. So look out for that.
Yes, and also this month, look out for Teen Titans, The Judas Contract, the animated brain trust. We'll be talking about that sometime this month because I have to go away again unexpectedly. And I don't saw it may get pushed off a little bit, but it'll be sometime this month. And also, we'll possibly do a show on the Vixen release that they're doing, the collection of those online cartoons they did that take place in the TV universe. We may may also do that.
Excellent. And we've got a Booksplode coming up this month. Last month, we had the Talksplode that Josh talked to Aubrey Sitterson about, which was great. This month, we're going to do a Booksplode. We're going to be reading Roughneck by Jeff Lemire. So this is a little your advance warning. You can pick up the book and read it in ahead of time to follow along in our conversation, but looking forward to it.
There was a patron hangout in May that was for April, but there's going to be a May one also, even though they're not switching them all. You're not losing one. We're just speeding it up a little bit. So I watch out for details on when that happens. You got to watch Twitter or Facebook, and we'll mention on here beforehand, but you'll know if you want to make plans to be there for that when it's happening. Watch this space.
And Ron and I will be talking about Iron Fist this month, probably.
Yes, I made a major dent in my watching this week, so we're almost there.
Ron, I finished it yesterday, so it's up.
Son of a bitch. All right, yeah, I should be done next week, so we can do that soon.
I made it 30 minutes into one episode.
Congratulations. Oh,
but yeah, one of the reasons why I was able to make a dent in Iron Fist is that over at my Twin Peaks podcast with Tom Merritt, a damn fine podcast, we finally finished season 2. So I'm done. I've stopped a marathon rewatch, so now I can watch everything else that's been backing up. But if you're a Twin Peaks fan, May 21st is the return of Twin Peaks to Showtime. Season 3 kicks off May 21st. So to celebrate that, Tom Merritt and I will be hosting a live stream for Damn Fine Podcast patrons, and Connor's going to be appearing on it as well. Connor's a regular on the show. So if you're interested in that, if you want to watch us talk about, we're going to be talking about some of the books of related to Twin Peaks, as well as our speculation and concerns and worries about Twin Peaks. That's going to be on May 21st, probably in the late afternoon or early evening before season 3 starts. You got to be a patron, though, of Damn Fine Podcast. So go to patreon.com/damnfinepodcast to sign up. You can sign up for as little as $1. And you can get in on the live stream. So that's going to be a lot of fun. And Connor, I'm looking forward to it as we both we bite our nails and nerves.
Can I tease the guest lineup for that show we just recorded?
Oh, yeah, actually, yeah. So we like I mentioned, we finished season 2. And for the season 2 finale, Connor returned. And Connor, you can reveal the other
guest. It was me and Ron and Tom and Gabriel Hardman talking about was then the series finale of Twin Peaks and is now just the season 2 finale. And it was a very interesting group of personalities talking about that.
Gabe did not disappoint.
It was super fun. So head it over to danfinepodcast.com.
And you can go over to ifanboy.com, of course, to talk about this show, see of all the other things we've done, listen to old podcasts. Everything we've ever done is there. So you can do that. And of course, like I just briefly mentioned, go to facebook.com/ifanboy or @ifanboy on Twitter to find out what the pick of the week is before the show, when that hangout is happening, et cetera, et cetera. And of course, you can follow us individually @JayFlanagan, @RonXO, and CSGo Patrick on Instagram.
And if you like the show, please leave a review on iTunes. That's for any podcast you listen to, whether that be this show, Damn Fine Podcast, any of the other popular ones that invented podcasting, go listen to them and leave a review. I just watched someone leave one live the other day, and it was it was exciting.
Yeah. Wow.
It was not exciting. They just hit a star number, but it was appreciated.
Yeah. All right. Well, it was nice to have everybody back together. So, Connor, thanks for coming back. We missed you.
Thank you. I was listening to the shows. I was very entertained, but also sad to have missed them. But I'm happy to be back.
That describes our shows pretty well. Entertained, but sad.
Until next time, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
I'm Josh. Let us know if you're still listening at this point, because I don't think you are. You better believe I'm back in the New York blue. I'm back in the New York blue. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works
two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.